Hello and welcome to episode 36 of the Help Side Basketball Coaching Strategy and Analytics Podcast. I'm your host, John Jansen, and we have come to the most unfortunate time of the year, and that's when basically every sport except for baseball is now done. We have no sports till August. We are stuck watching nothing but baseball until college football starts up again in August. In today's episode, we are going to go not quite team by team, but go over a bunch of different teams and talk about their season and what they need to do moving forward to be better next year. In the analytics section, we're going to talk about instilling your system and culture during the summer. And in the strategy session, we're going to talk about, along the same lines, repetition of what you're doing and being detail-oriented in those repetitions and making sure that guys are doing things the right way in the offseason. So starting off with our NBA roundtable, NBA season's finished on Monday. Denver won 4-1. It kind of played out the way I thought it would play out, especially in the West, obviously. And it kind of played out the way we thought it was going to play out in the West. I thought the Suns would be better, obviously. I think I picked them, and I think I picked Boston also. But I guess I underestimated how good Denver was. And I knew Denver was good, but I just saw the Suns during the regular season when they were unbeatable, basically, when Durant was playing. And I kind of overvalued them, for sure. And as soon as the playoffs started and they were stuck in a tough series with the Clippers, I immediately went, oh, I'm wrong. There's no way they're beating Denver. And so I knew my pick was wrong there. But other than that, it kind of played out how I thought. So we're going to go team by team and kind of recap and talk about what needs to be done moving forward, in my opinion. So we'll start at the top and move our way down. So we'll start with Denver. And I thought Denver was clearly the best team, especially the way things started falling apart in the East. I thought it became Denver's championship to lose. Their depth was great. Their unselfishness was great. I mean, they're just really good everywhere. Jamal Murray and Jokic are obviously a really great tandem, but their role players were really, really good. Aaron Gordon, you know, kind of isn't the most skilled player, but he like does his job really well. He defends, he scores around the bucket, he'll knock down an occasional three. You know, Bowen coming off the bench is just energy and points and hustle, and he's just like so great for them. Michael Porter, while he's not a great defender, he's able to put the ball in the basket and make plays on the offensive end. And he just does just enough on defense to make himself valuable. And then they're just like long. And Caldwell Pope is like the most underrated, one of the most underrated players in the league. I loved him when he was on the Lakers. I was sad he left. He just goes about his job. And, you know, he's really actually like kind of emerging now as like a good player, not just a role player, someone that can be counted on for points and stuff like that. But he's just an elite defender. He's a really solid scorer, and he plays his ass off, and he's just like really fun to watch. And, you know, you could see as the playoffs went deeper and deeper how valuable he was to them. And then, you know, the other guys that came off the bench were also just really solid. You know, Zeller's solid, and these guys just come in and they don't try to do too much. They just give the starters their breaks and kind of keep the game where it's at and let the starters come in and win the games. And that's what they did. Looking forward for them, I mean, you know, a lot of people have already said, you know, Mike Malone came out and said, we're already thinking about next year and we want to have a dynasty. And, you know, they're kind of in a situation where they're all young. You know, I don't know who's going to be a free agent, who's going to need to get paid, which means some guys are going to have to go. But with this team as constructed right now, if they keep this group together and, you know, maybe get rid of some guys on the outside that didn't play, like a DeAndre Jordan, and just find some other guys, I mean, but really they don't need much. I mean, they were really, really good with their core guys. and they had good depth, and they don't really need too much more. So until they have to start losing guys because they want to get paid, this team could be the best team in the West for a while and therefore be, you know, a contender to win multiple championships. So I don't think him saying that was a crazy thing, because they are young and they are a team that is going to get better, you would think, because of how young they are. So it's scary for everybody else, but I really believe that when he says that, he's actually correct. Moving to Miami, obviously they overachieved. They were clearly outclassed in the finals. And look, they're a good team, but they're not a championship team. And you can say, well, they were three wins away, but yeah, I guess you can say it. I really felt like things broke for them really well. You know, you look at the first round against Milwaukee, and you have a team that missed Giannis for the first game and a half, basically, and clearly didn't like their coach because he won a championship a couple years ago, was the number one seed this year, and he gets fired. And we've all heard grumblings that they weren't happy with him. And so I felt like they were the beneficiary of a team that was kind of turning in on itself, especially down the stretch. And so they get the benefit of that. Then they play a Knicks team who I think they were probably the same amount good as, if not a little bit better than, but a team where we all know that Tom Thibodeau's teams overperform in the regular season because he demands like every game to be like a playoff game, and they just don't have another level really to go to in the playoffs. And so this has kind of been the story with Thibodeau, and I love him. I think he's a fantastic coach, but his teams always kind of fizzle out in the playoffs because they don't have another gear. And I think sometimes they're also tired because he demands so much of them during the regular season. So they were the beneficiary of that. And then they go to a Boston team who I still think could have competed and possibly beaten Denver in the finals, but they don't have a coach. And it was clear in those games against Miami and even against Philly when they almost blew that series that there is a problem. And look, all young coaches have this. It's the need to gain experience. And that's just the way it is. And that's why most young coaches don't get ready to win teams. Usually it's your second or your third coaching stop where you start to win, because it takes time to learn and to fail before you can succeed. And you get put in the situation where you're a championship contender, and he really seemed to miss some things there. And another thing about Boston that I noticed different from last year, I felt like last year they made the extra pass and they really played really well together. And this year I felt like maybe because they didn't have a coach who's authoritative that they didn't, and there was some selfishness, a lot of one-on-one stuff. Whereas last year they would go one-on-one and then kick, kick, kick and get a wide open shot or redrive and kick. And this year it'd be one-on-one shot, quick shots in transition. And then all of a sudden in game four against Miami, like early in the third quarter, it just clicked. And they just went back to that team that was basically unstoppable. And then they just destroyed them for the next couple games. And then what happened in game seven? I don't know. Maybe the moment got too big. Maybe they relaxed because they thought, okay, we won that game in Miami. We've done it. And you know, the home court will just carry us across. And it just didn't happen. And Miami came out and whooped them, actually, in game seven. So I still think moving forward, they're young enough, with the exception of Al Horford. They're all pretty young. I think this team, I would choose them to be the favorite in the East next year, if not Milwaukee. But I think, you know, they somehow own Milwaukee. I've noticed, I've said it before. So I don't think they need anything significant. I think they're really solid across the board. They have a good like group that's all the same size. They can switch 1 through 5. They have good scoring. They have just everything. They have good defenders. Like, they have everything you need to be a championship team for a long time. Now it's all going to depend if they stay together, because of course there's rumblings that Jaylen Brown might leave to go to Houston. Look, he seems to me like the Klay Thompson of this team, where if there was no Jason Tatum, he would be a megastar. But because Jason Tatum exists and they're on the same team, he's kind of taken this second, like this Robin role, and he's probably sick of it. And it's kind of like what James Harden did when he was on OKC, where he was kind of, when Harden was on OKC, he wasn't a starter, but he was averaging like 17 points a game, and then he goes to Houston and he's leading scorer in the league for like 5 years straight or whatever, you know. And I feel like Jaylen Brown for himself feels kind of the same way, where he feels like he could be a star, and instead he's a B option because he's playing with a star. And so, look, if he wants to win championships, he should stay. If he wants to be an alpha and score a lot of points and get paid, then maybe he goes somewhere else. So that will be the reason that maybe they don't reach their potential in the next few years. But they have the pieces right now, I believe. Next, the Lakers. I was really happy with the Lakers' playoff run. You know, when they beat Memphis, I was satisfied. I said, I thought Denver was better. And I'm a big Laker guy, but I said, you know what? We've beaten two good teams. We've exceeded expectations, and now we're playing probably the best team in the NBA, and clearly the best team left in the NBA. So I'm happy. I would have loved if they could have won. You know, they were right there in multiple of the games, and if they could have pulled a couple of those out, who knows what would have happened. But you know, it was disappointing to get swept, because even game four they should have had. You know, they had I think they had an 11-point lead at halftime or something, and they just couldn't close, which is frustrating because of course that comes back to LeBron. So I was happy with the way the season went. I was happy with their playoff run, but they are not good enough to win a championship right now. And people will say, well, they only played together for so and so many games before the playoffs. Yeah, but they weren't better than Denver. And if you want to win a championship, you have to be better than everybody. So they are, again, a piece or two away. Now, I came up with an idea, and I've said it to a couple friends, and they actually thought it was better for the other team. So I'm gonna say it here. It seems as though Phoenix isn't really happy with DeAndre Ayton, and they want to get rid of Chris Paul. So I say they package those two guys together to the Lakers, and the Lakers give them D'Angelo Russell, so they have a point guard, Austin Reeves, and Jared Vanderbilt. So it would give the Suns some depth and some scoring and a point guard, so they wouldn't be without a point guard. And it would give the Lakers the win right now mentality with an older Chris Paul and the size that I think they desperately, the Lakers desperately need, because I love Anthony Davis, but when he was at his best was their championship season, when they had JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, when he could play the four. And think about the matchup nightmare that is for other teams when you go, like it was that year when they had seven-footer, and then LeBron James at the three. And so with DeAndre Ayton, they would go seven-footer, AD seven-footer, LeBron, and then maybe Rui Hachimura at the two, and they're just like 6'8 across the board, 6'8, 6'8, 7 foot, 7 foot, and then Chris Paul at the point guard. I mean, I love that lineup. And, you know, obviously Austin Reeves is going to want to get paid soon, so that would get him off the books and give the Suns like a good, young, exciting player. And yes, would the Lakers be mortgaging their future? Yes, but when you have a chance to win right now, I think you go for it, especially with LeBron James, who might be leaving in 2 years anyway. So if you can get LeBron another championship and get the Lakers another championship, when LeBron leaves, the Lakers are going to be crap no matter what. So you might as well go for it now and just deal with the consequences later, because either way, his shelf life is not that many more years. So I say go for it. I don't know how the money works and all the contract stuff, but I think both teams would be happy with that kind of trade, and I would be happy with it as well. Because, like I said, they need another piece in order to contend with the Denver Nuggets. Next, let's go with Boston. I touched on them earlier about the coaching situation. I really think they're good. I think there's not a lot to talk about. I know the coach needs more experience, especially in those high pressure situations. But as far as from a personnel perspective, I think they are good if they can keep that group together. Of course, you know, if a guy or two leaves, they're going to need to replace those guys. But I really think that they have a team that can win a championship right now. Next, Milwaukee Bucks. I think they also have a team that can win the championship. I'm not sure about who they hired. I feel like this team needed a veteran coach who's been there before. Like, you look at these young coaches, man, and it just doesn't go well right away. Like, even Darvin Ham, I thought he made some mistakes coaching. I thought he got out-coached. Even in series they won. You know, the Boston coach. All of these young coaches, or not young coaches, but new coaches, it's their first time around, there's a learning curve. And so you have these teams that are like championship-ready teams. You need a coach that's been there so you don't waste a year or 2 years, and then maybe your window passes because guys leave for free agency or whatever. So I'm not sure about that. I really like their length. And they're not a young team. So going after it now is the most important thing. So look, maybe the coach will be great. I don't know, but I would have gone with a more established guy as my head coach. Next, the Warriors. You know, I kind of think the Warriors window might be closed or closing. Everybody on that team is older. Even Steph is like a sneaky 35. He just like has a baby face and nobody really knows it. You know, Draymond Green is still useless. Klay is solid. But Jordan Poole doesn't seem to... isn't really gelling like he was a couple years ago with those guys. I think he's a guy who, again, started feeling himself early, and he still kind of has this, like, I'm the man swag instead of we're the team swag. And it kind of seems like their window is over. I mean, they had a pretty healthy team, unless I'm forgetting something. And they couldn't win on the road, and they're knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, with this team, what are we looking at? We're looking at a 36-year-old Steph Curry. We're looking at a Draymond Green who is, in my opinion, a liability offensively. And I know he scored 20 points, but it was like the first time in like 10 years or something that he scored 20 points. But you don't have to guard him. And so, yeah, you'll give up your 8 points in exchange for being able to help off on him the entire game. I mean, it's so worth it to me. Jordan Poole, I mean, I don't know if he lost his confidence, but he was awful in the playoffs. He almost, like, didn't play in some games. And I just don't see, with this current team, how they're going to be better than everyone in the West. So I think they need several new players, and if that means, you know, letting a Draymond go or letting some of these other trading for Jordan Poole for somebody and getting some good, like, depth and role players that can be a good complement to Steph and Klay, I think that might be the way to go. Because a 6 seed getting knocked out 4-2 in the first round is not a team that's on the brink of winning a championship. Next is Philly. I think they got a really good upgrade at coach. I think that they immediately become a contender in the East. Now, are they good enough to beat Boston and Milwaukee? I don't know. But I think they were up 3-2 against Milwaukee. Sorry, against Boston. And they couldn't win a home game. And I think, look, Doc is known for not being able to win big games. And after he was fired or released or whatever, it immediately came out that some of the players were not happy with his coaching. And then all over the internet, people came out and said he's not the guy. So maybe there is more there than, you know, I had originally thought. But I think they have a really good team. Could they upgrade at some positions? Definitely. I think if they get one or two more solid guys, and not even like stars, you know, just guys who can be really good role players and be a complement to Tobias and Harden and Joel and just make open shots and defend. That's all they need. That's why Boston's so good. They got their couple of stars, and then they just got a bunch of other really solid role players who can knock down threes and defend. I mean, that's all you need from those guys. So it's going to be very interesting how Philly looks this coming up year. And I think they have a really good chance to do the same, if not better, this year, even though James Harden's going to be a year older. And the last team we're going to talk about is the Suns. Again, I think that Frank Vogel is a good coach. He's won a championship before. But it's very interesting to me that they are letting go of Chris Paul because they don't really have another point guard. I know they got the lefty, and his name is escaping me right now. But I thought he wasn't great this year in the playoffs. And the core is there. If they keep Ayton, they have a really good three guys right there with Booker, Durant, and Ayton. But they need to have more depth around them, and that means finding players, maybe making a trade, getting the depth they need. So in the playoffs, they couldn't play because they looked so tired because no one got a break, and because the guys who came off the bench didn't do anything, and so they were just like struggling the whole time, just to squeeze out that series against the Clippers, and then basically not really have a chance against Denver. So they really need to expand their depth. And if that means, that's why I think trading Chris Paul and trading DeAndre Ayton, if they really don't like Ayton, would be far superior to just letting them go. Like they're talking about waiving Chris Paul if they haven't already. So, but I trust Frank Vogel. He's done it. He won a championship with the Lakers. He took Indiana deep in the playoffs every year. So I think he's going to add a stability now. I think Monty Williams is a good coach too. I'm not sure really what went wrong there. Or maybe the Suns organization's expectations were just maybe too high. And so that's why they got rid of him. If that's the case, then they're silly because, you know, you ran into a really, really good Denver team. I mean, I sat here and told my friends the Lakers, you could say they were the second best team in the NBA. Because if they were in the East, I mean, I think if the Lakers were in the finals against Miami, I think they beat them. And they probably beat them 4-2 or something. Now, could Milwaukee and Boston say, well, yeah, we're better than the Lakers? Yeah, for sure. But Phoenix can say, well, we lost to Denver, who was the eventual champion. We're right there. We just happened to play, you know, the best team in the league in the second round. So they're really not that far away. But they definitely need to expand on their depth. Moving on to the analytics section, we're going to talk about instilling your system and culture in the summer. And this is something we're doing at the school I'm at right now. We're having workouts, and we're really breaking down the offense piece by piece. And basically starting from scratch, because even though you have players who know the system, you still have a lot of guys who are new, who have just signed, and players who didn't play that much. And so they got less reps, and especially less reps with the first team. So how it works with us is the guys who play, who are in the rotation, I would say get 85% of the reps in practice. So if you're not one of those guys, you're playing, but you're playing against us. So when we do scout, you're the other team. Or even when we're, you know, if we're working on our offense, then you're just playing defense like the other team would. Even if there's no scout, you're just playing defense as if a normal team would. Same thing offense. While they are running our stuff when they're on offense and we're working on our defense, their coach isn't really worried about them executing our offense. He wants them to play and let our guys defend. And then when we have a scouting report, of course, they're not even doing our stuff at all. They're doing somebody else's stuff. So there's a lot of new people. And so I think it's good to start at the basics and get the fundamentals of the offense down. And putting in that culture of hard work, getting in the weight room, you know, getting there on time, being disciplined, all these things that you want. I think the summer is a great opportunity to start instilling that and start showing your culture and transferring your culture from the old guys that are gone to the new guys. And I think that's like very valuable, because I know there's a lot of places that either don't do summer, which is in many location, many stops I was at, we didn't even have a summer because everybody went home, or they just do open gym and just say, hey, get out there and play and have fun. I love that we spend the first hour working on our stuff, and then the second hour implementing it with some half court stuff and then some full court stuff, and kind of carrying over what we worked on that day and having that be the point of emphasis. So instead of working on everything when we scrimmage, we say, hey, we're gonna work on flares today, and we're gonna work on the flare slip. And when we scrimmage, I mean, we're gonna see a lot of flares, a lot of slips, and working on that action. So that's ingrained in their mind. And then we can incorporate all of those different aspects of the offense as we kind of get closer and closer to the start of the season. And kind of going along with that is the repetition of doing the things the right way. So let me explain. This happened, and this happens to everybody, but we were having a workout and we would say, okay, we're going to do a down screen and the guy's going to pop and take a shot. Okay. We down screen. The guy comes off the screen, knocks down the shot. We say, okay, now we're going to down screen and the guy's going to slip after he sets the screen and we're going to hit him for the layup. Well, without many exceptions, the guy coming off the screen when the slipper was getting the ball just kind of jogged off the screen and ran back to the line instead of coming off hard as if he didn't know who was going to get the ball. And then we went to flares. And first we did the flare slip, and the guys are getting the slip and laying it up. Now we said, okay, now we're going to do a flare and hit the flare guy for a shot. With few exceptions, the guys just stopped slipping. They would just set the screen and run back in line. And I think those habits are awful. And it's something that needs to be nipped in the bud, because we went to the scrimmage and the guys didn't have it ingrained in their heads that they should be slipping every time. And I saw, look, in a 30-minute scrimmage, four different times probably where had a guy slipped properly, he had a layup. And now, look, that's not something that guys are used to doing. So it's a combination of, number one, the repetition where they didn't do the right thing every single time, and them not being people who usually slip on a flare screen. So they weren't, you know, that's not something that they just picked up and just is part of their game 20 minutes after we did the drill. So I know for me, it's like so crazy, because I don't know exactly how I was as a player, but I know as I've gotten older as a player, the repetition, doing things exactly precise is so important, was so important to me. And now as a coach, it is so important to me. And so there'll be times, I remember my last head coaching job, where sometimes I would, like in the off season, I would get in line and show these guys how to do a drill. And it would be down screen for a shot. And even though I wasn't even showing a slip or showing a roll, I would roll every single time. And I wasn't even doing it to prove a point. It was just like so ingrained in me. It was like subconscious. Like, boom, I set the screen. My job after setting a screen is to roll or slip to the basket every single time. And I just did it. And I didn't even, you know, of course I would afterwards tell them, but I wasn't doing it to be like, hey, this is what you're supposed to. I was just doing it because it was like a natural thing. And whenever I show something at the beginning of a drill, my natural instincts are to roll to the basket or do the fundamental thing. And look, that was just the way I was. I wasn't super athletic, so I beat players by being more fundamentally sound and more efficient and more, you know, detail oriented than them. And so it's something that I try to emphasize to the players and hope that they pick up on, because it's so wild to me how players don't want free points. Everybody wants to score, but if I say, hey, you would score 8 points a game if all you do is sprint the floor every single possession of the game. You'll have 8 points right there. If you never touch the ball on offense the entire game, but you sprint the floor as hard as you can every single possession, you'd have 8 points. A guy would be like, oh yeah, that's awesome. I will do it. And then they'll never do it. If I told a guy he would slip, if he slips every single or rolls after every single screen, that he would get two more baskets every single game, every single person would tell me, yes, I would love to do that. And then they would go in the game and not do it. And it's like, it's so weird. Like, especially I'll see a guy and we'll be in transition and he'll be one step past the last defender. And all he has to do is sprint 5 steps and he has a layup. And they just slow up. And I'm like, didn't you want that layup? And it's almost like they never respond because I don't understand it. And I really don't. Because you see the guys, and we had a guy last year. He wasn't a super skilled offensive player, but he averaged 17 points a game. And they were basically all layups because he never stopped moving. He would just curl and backdoor and cut and then sprinted the floor harder than anyone else on our team because he just wanted to score. He just loved scoring points, so he did whatever he had to do to score points. And it's like, why don't other people do that? It's there, and they see it, and they just go, is the trade-off of sprinting these extra 4 steps worth, in practice? To me, it is. But I don't understand. It's something I'll never understand because they see it. I'm standing like parallel with them. All they have to do is sprint and they don't do it. And same thing with the slip screen. We have a guy who's like a really solid player and he's a little below average 3-point shooter. And if he slipped every time, he would score 1,000,000 points. But man, does this guy want to shoot threes. And I just tell him, hey, you understand when you're inside the 3-point line, you're the best player on the floor. And when you're outside the 3-point line, if your three's not going in, you really have less value. And I mean, he'll set a down screen, the other team will switch, he'll have a point guard on him, and he'll pop out to the corner. And I'm like, I don't understand. This is free 2 points. All you have to do is roll to the basket, post this guy up, and he cannot stop you. So sorry I went on a little rant there, but the stuff that's available for people who play the game the right way, it's there, and it's just a matter of the players recognizing it and wanting to do it. That's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate you listening. You can check us out on YouTube at The Help Side and on Twitter at The Help Side. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.